Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
Mateta. Jordan Ayew goes for goal. Oh! And how? In some style too. What a strike that was. Out of absolutely nothing. Here comes the corner. It's a dangerous one and it's headed home. And Everton are level. Amadou Onana rises and gets Everton on level terms. The substitute has delivered.
Hello, Blues. It's the Toffee Web Podcast. We're back for the first time in a couple of weeks. As we record, there's still no news of the independent panel's decision on Everton's appeal against their 10-point deduction handed down by the Premier League in November. All the while, the games go on with no one at all clear how many points the Blues have, how many Nottingham Forest might end up with, or whether Everton will lose even more. The whole situation is weighing the club down, something that I think you could feel by all accounts at Goodison on Monday night. A sense that either contributed to or was compounded by a dreadful performance that I suppose at least yielded a 1-1 draw thanks to another late set-piece goal, this time by Amadou Onana. I'm Lyndon Lloyd, joined by Adam McCulloch and Paul McParlin. Adam, I'll come to you first and then Paul can chime in. It's 8 games without a win now in the league, without a goal scored from open play in 10. You don't have to go back all that far to when we won 4 on the bounce, put 3 past Newcastle, 2 past Chelsea, ran Spurs very close on their patch in a game we really didn't deserve to lose. I mean, we've talked a lot as a collective on this pod about the role that a number of factors have played in results and performances over the past few weeks. I won't reel them off in case you want to raise some of them in your answer, but I mean, it's clearly a challenging time for the club on and off the pitch. Nevertheless, I think, I mean, even though we've seen the movie that played out on Monday night many times before, I think we all expected a lot better in terms of a display, didn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think particularly against such an insipid and poor-looking Crystal Palace side. And I think that was where a lot of the frustration was born from. Obviously, we can point to matters off the pitch and the huge, huge feeling of uncertainty going into this week. Certainly ahead of the weekend, we were all wondering was there going to be an announcement by Friday? Then it turned to, well, it's probably not going to be Monday in case there's open revolt. And that shadow that's been cast over the club, well, we all know the effect that that's going to have, certainly on the fan base as much as the players. I know James Garner alluded to that in his, well, in some of his remarks at least. But in terms of that performance on Monday night, let's look at it in isolation just for a second. My one-word review when I was making a couple of words, writing a couple of words down for today, was shite. It was shite. There was absolutely... And I've tried since to work out some positives from there, and I guess we'll try and do that because we do try and skew more towards the glass half full brigade. But on Monday, it was a glass full of just despair, really. It was so flat. And I think that's what really angered me at half time was that, in particular, and at full time, to some extent, there was a little sense of relief because we were so bad, yet we still got something out of the game. But at half time, in particular, the feeling was that we were playing a side struggling with injuries, who were clearly completely lacking in confidence themselves, who've obviously had a strange week off the pitch as well, I guess, with Roy Hodgson and then a new manager being announced just ahead of the game.
Yeah.
And so if you wanted a perfect time to play Crystal Palace at home, that was it. That was the ideal set of conditions. And we played like an away side. We played so passively. It was kind of shocking at the end of the game to see how much of a ball we had, although it was easy to forget at times because we used the ball so badly at the back, just constantly recycling it. And then occasionally a really sad stray diagonal ball that sometimes came off, but more often than not didn't.
Yeah.
We looked like we wanted rid of the ball at times. No one really grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck in the way that you'd expect a home side to do. And Palace in that first half looked like the ones who would create something, and that was really saying something because they were dreadful. They were really, really poor. I think they were probably counting their chickens when they realised probably 10 or 15 minutes in that Everton didn't look like they were going to lay a glove on them. And as I say, but the fact that we did get that towering set piece header from Anana is a small miracle, really, because we just didn't look like we were going to score. Not a happy bunny, really. How did you see it, Paul?
Yeah, pretty much the way that you saw it, Adam. I think if it highlights the feelings of most fans at the game extremely well. I think from my perspective, I always worry before the game when there's feelings of optimism amongst the fan base that we're going to win. And all the pre-match hype was, this is a game we're going to win, we have to win. Everything says before us, Palace are in disarray, the manager's left, and they got played. No, there's no Eze, there's no Elise. And it just looked on paper like this was the golden opportunity to cut the gap between us and Palace to 2 points from five. And that always started to worry me. As you got closer to the stadium, I was feeling more and more pessimistic. Normally I go the other way around. And it's just because even the conversations on the way to the stadium were, oh, well, we've got to beat them 2-0, we've got to beat them 3-0. And I just felt, it never works out like that for Everton, does it? It was compounded when I saw the team selection. When I saw the right flank was going to be Ashley Young and Ben Godfrey, I just thought, well, that's going to be easy for Palace to deal with. There's absolutely no issue there whatsoever. And it was kind of the way the game transpired, I thought. I thought within about 10 minutes, as you said, Palace realised they didn't have to work that hard to get a result there. And I think their strategy of playing three centre-backs effectively took Calvert-Lewin out of the game. I was comparing our forwards' performance with Jordan Ayew. I don't particularly rate Jordan Ayew as a forward, but he always seems to play well against Everton. Yeah, and what he did really well was he held the ball up every time he got the ball. He didn't get possession away cheaply. He hung on to it. He brought players in. And every time we had possession at the back, he chased our defenders down. I was looking at him thinking, there's no team doing that. There's nobody putting Palace under pressure. The Young-Godfrey combination was summed up for me in the first half when Ben Godfrey starts what looked like a really promising run down the flanks. He got to the halfway line and Ashley Young almost intercepted him, took the ball off him and then lost it. And you just thought, who on earth thought that was a good idea to play those two together? So, yeah, it was a totally dispiriting performance from start to finish. And I really couldn't see how on earth we're going to get a goal back, because we weren't getting many set pieces. Then we got three corner kicks throughout the whole game. I thought Dwight McNeil looked one pace once again throughout the whole match. James Garner had one of his most inconsistent performances I'd seen for a while. And you mentioned before, Adam, about somebody taking a grip of the game. There appears to be nobody on the team who wanted to do that. So, like yourself, I was incredibly relieved when we got that equalising goal. I'd add a ride to that. It's about time Onana started getting a few headers in from corners like that, given the size and the height. But yeah, the goal was welcome nonetheless. And when you left the stadium, yeah, it was a feeling of, well, A, it could have been a lot worse. B, Palace could have been 8 points clear of us, and effectively almost out of our reach. And at least we didn't lose. We kept the gap to 5 points. And you left the ground with a very, very peace, modicum of hope, because it could have been, and probably should have been, so much worse.
Yeah. I think if you're Palace, you're really gutted that you didn't actually go on and win that game, you know, having gone ahead, because it had that sort of, as I say, we've seen this movie before, it had that sort of time-old Everton thing where, you know, we've had a few chances and not converted anything, and then the other team goes and scores, and then we end up just, you know, losing 1-0. So, I mean, it's credit to the mentality and the spirit of the players that, just as they did against Spurs, they came back and, you know, scored a late set-piece goal, because set-piece goals is apparently all we can do right now. But, I mean, football is a simple game. That's a Deitchism in itself, isn't it? But I think there's a danger sometimes of making it too simple. I mean, in the Premier League, you need to be able to adapt. You need to be able to, both your setup and your personnel, particularly, I mean, in this circumstance where Palace have gone with a back three, you know, the fact that we didn't really make any allowances for that at halftime, let's say, where you can, you know, maybe go match them like for like, or just find a different way of trying to get through, which is, you know, it's a big back line. Calvert-Lewin, I actually thought, played fairly well. I was critical of him the previous week. I think he did everything you could ask of him against three big lads back there. You know, particularly, I think, you know, Joel Ward had a really good game, unfortunately. You know, he's a versatile player who actually played out of his natural position, which I suppose is right back. He actually performed really, really well, whereas I don't think you could say some of the same for some of our players. I mean, there's no question that, I mean, as we've said, Palace, with the run of form that they've been on, with them missing their four best players, they were there for the taking on Monday. I mean, you know, Dyche admitted that he benched Harrison to freshen things up, but playing in his place a 38-year-old who offers so little going forward as it is, it's just the kind of uber cautious, overly conservative approach that drives me nuts. And it's what eventually brought us to the point where we just had enough of David Moyes. And I think the West Ham fans are kind of in the same boat, you know, regardless of the achievements that he's had down there. And as you said, Paul, that starting 11 that fed into the crowd's demeanor and contributed, I think, very much to that flat atmosphere, because I think you can almost prime the pump for a good atmosphere with a really positive team selection. You know, we've had to watch some really, really dull football lately, but if you put, let's say, a Nathan Patterson or a Lewis Dobbin on that right wing and tell them to have a real go at what is, you know, a struggling team and a patched up team, I guarantee you to give them something for the crowd to get behind. And I think, as you saw, you know, the improvement in the performance when Young went off and Harrison came on was there to be seen, because for all Harrison's kind of deficiencies in the final third, he at least offers energy and he's prepared to take a man on. You know, he was a bit hit and miss with his crosses, but he put in one of the best deliveries of the game after he came on. Dyche clearly has his reservations about Patterson, but I mean, they can only really be in terms of his defensive ability, because he can be really good going forward. I mean, he has as many assists as Doucouré, for example, this season. He's, you know, he set up that obviously that one goal for Beto at the end of a game. That game against Newcastle feels like a lifetime ago. You know, I mean, you contrast that 30-pass move that we put together against Newcastle with what we witnessed on Monday. It's like a different team, and it's mostly the same players. So, you know, going sort of expanding on the simplicity theme, it's the mind-numbing simplicity. And I think we'll, you know, I'll be charitable and use that word rather than Sunday League or National League. I've seen both references to that performance, you know, about us going forward, because the standard play really just seems to have devolved in recent weeks. I remember we were debating on this pod sort of the merits of, of Dyche being appointed last year when it was still between him and Bielsa. And I think the big knock against Dyche was the brand of football that he's known for. And my worry is that we're not seeing any evidence right now that they actually work on moving the ball in training, that they actually work on any passing drills whatsoever. In fact, I wonder why they do at Finch Farm at all sometimes, you know, apart from running drills and set pieces. Now, again, there's this whole host of challenges and factors that Dyche is having to work against. But my question for you fellas, and whoever wants to jump in, you know, first can do so, is, you know, just as we saw with Roberto Martinez eventually reverting to type, are we witnessing a reversion to the Dyche ball mean here? Because fans are not going to be able to put up with much more of what they saw against Palace.
You use the word simple there, but at times it was so simple that it looked difficult. And I think seeing it, I mean, from my seat, if we just look at the right flank alone, I know we expect things in the modern world to be fast. You know, we want our food fast. We want to skip the ads. We want things to be quick. And maybe yeah. We're used to watching higher quality fare on television, or even, I don't know, computer games where things look impossibly quick. But seeing Ashley Young move in the flesh down the right flank in a Premier League football game, and then worryingly as well, you mentioned it as well, Paul, Dwight McNeil on the other flank, who presumably what they're doing at Finch Farm is making him run through treacle hours at a time because yeah. He looked shattered. He looked absolutely exhausted from minute go. And having that lack of pace out wide, again, against a side who are patched up, who have found a way to kind of try and keep themselves pretty solid, when you've got no pace, then what do you do when you've got a midfield that doesn't want to grab hold of a game, which presumably they've been kind of told to do? They've been told to be pretty cautious on the ball. Then that's what you're going to get. And Calvert-Lewin, yeah, he worked hard on his own. At times he was the only sort of one either chasing down a terrible lost cause of a ball. I think at one point in the second half, he sort of made a bit of a barreling run down the left-hand flank. But then you realise, well, the exact person you want in the middle is way out on the left flank. So there's suddenly no focal point anymore. And he was really having to kind of feed off, it would be generous to call them scraps. So all of this comes from a manager. Now, do we get the positives of that? Yes, I guess we get set piece goals, and we don't look as likely to concede as we did, certainly under recent managers, Lampard being the sort of obvious recent one. We look more solid, yes. And would the table feel a lot more relaxing were we 10 points better off? Yes, of course it would. So that does seep in. I'm not in that fear factor stage that I have been, say, this time last year or the season before. And certainly coming out of the ground, I wasn't thinking, oh, wow, we're staring down the barrel of a gun again. But you're right to flag up the style of play, because at some point, something has to give there. I mean, 15 shots on goal sounds great, but nobody coming out of the ground on Mondays thinking, wow, we had 15 really good chances there and played some top stuff. It would be generous to call a lot of those chances as well. So I'd hope with a fitter Decore, who, although rusty, added a little something in terms of some of the touches he showed.
Yeah.
And I think with a restored Harrison out wide, or someone out wide, because surely it cannot be Ashley Young out wide. That's one of those. That's where you're right to draw those comparisons with a Martinez, with a Moyes, where stubbornness starts to creep in with a manager. Yeah. The fact that Ashley Young emerged in the second half at all, or that we essentially remained in the same shape, was kind of, you could feel the sort of, but not shock, but just the rumbling discontent as we saw no board go up on 45 minutes. And I think that is worrying, but I think we've all as well got that kind of realization that, okay, yes, we're in a difficult moment on and off the pitch. So this very kids' gloves approach that Dyche takes isn't the biggest problem that we face right now, put it that way. But if we were 10 points better off and we were playing like that, I don't know. Although that's counterintuitive, isn't it? Because we'd be 10 points better off. Yeah. But it was crap, wasn't it, Paul? Agree with me how crap it was.
Yeah, that's one of the many words from the thesaurus I could use to describe it. Definitely, Adam. Yeah, I mean, going back to what you said there, Adam, I think you're right to raise, you know, the one positive from Deitch's tenure at the moment is the massive improvements in our defence, because, you know, we've got the fourth best defence in the Premier League. The only three teams who conceded less than us are Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool. So there's been a huge improvement there compared to the Lampard days, where routinely we lose 4-5-0. And quite often you watch Everton games and you don't feel too concerned we're going to give too many goals away. Now, the last two games at home, it's a wonder goal from Ayew, it's a wonder goal from Richarlison, which you can't really legislate for.
Yeah.
But it boils back down to the question of balance as well, doesn't it? At some stage, okay, you know, Dice's strategy might be at the moment to draw our way to safety, which might work. I don't know. But at some stage, you've got to be a bit more creative. At some stage, you've got to offer the fans a bit more, particularly at home, because we've won three home games all season. You look at our remaining fixtures, our home form is the key to survival this season. If we win out those remaining home games, then we're going to, you know, pull well clear of the bottom three. Let's hope it works out that way. But I think the lack of creativity really frustrates me at times at the moment. And I know he's got lack of options there. The other week, Linda, we talk about Chimisi. We paid £13 million for this guy, and he's on the bench week in, week out. Well, you know, if we paid that amount of money for him, surely we must have seen something in him that he could offer the team. I'm still baffled why Dobbin doesn't get a look in. As you said before, if Dobbin and Patterson start on the right flank, it would have given Palace something else to think about. So I think, you know, Dyche can sometimes be a victim of his own uber caution, so to speak, that he kind of approaches the game from the point of view, we're not going to lose it. If we stay at 0-0, we might sneak something from set piece, which, you know, might have delighted the purists of turf more. But I think at Goodison Park, we're kind of used to a higher aspiration, higher standards of football. And I think that's where the frustration spilled over on Monday evening. I think you're right, well, Adam, you know, if we had now those points deducted, then, okay, it would have been an uninspiring performance on Monday. But I don't think we would have quite got the same reaction, because we wouldn't have been fighting relegation. And I think the whole uncertainty over, are we getting points back? Are we getting points back? I think it's finally getting through to the team now. And, you know, no other team in Premier League history has had to go through a season with this weight on their shoulders of this 10-point deduction and not knowing if it's going to be rescinded, some points given back, or not changed whatsoever. And after a while, no matter how mentally strong you are, no matter how resilient you are, that is going to have an impact on performance. And I know James Garner kind of drew criticism in some quarters for his comments after the game, but I think he was right to say that, because regardless, it's not our fault about the 10 points taken off by the Premier League. You know, the players haven't deserved those 10 points taken off them. So we do kind of have to stick together. But yeah, the lack of creativity, I don't think, if Dyche is here next season, we can't get away with that style of football again next season. I don't think the fans will put up with that for the third season. And it's where the creativity comes from, I don't know. And how it fits into Dyche's team plan, I don't know. Because you look at Gomez, who's probably been on his few appearances our most creative player, but he's got no pace whatsoever.
Yeah.
So you don't quite see where he fits into a Dyche system here. So, yeah, it's a hugely concerning performance on Monday night. But as you said, Adam, we got a point out at the end. Okay, you know, we haven't won any of the last eight games, but we've only lost three of them. So you can kind of make it out either way. But at some point, Calvert-Lewin's got to start scoring goals again. And as you said as well, Adam, there before, he's not going to score goals on the left wing. I think when Ancelotti took charge of Everton, the first thing he said to Calvert-Lewin was, stay in the penalty area. And I just wish maybe he'd have that instruction now at Everton, because that's where he's most effective, rather than chasing down long balls on the flanks.
The problem with that is that if he just stayed between the posts, he'd never get the ball. But Paul Trails just dropped in. Adam summed up Monday night with a one-word summation, the word shite. Any advance on that adjective?
Oh, God. In one word? Oh, that. Perplexing. I don't know. It was a bit rubbish, wasn't it? I mean, one thing is, it was a poor performance. It was one of the poor performances, really, in the whole season, really, wasn't it? I think on the face of it. But still quite a lot of chances, despite that. At the game, it didn't really feel like it at the time, but looking back, there was actually quite a number of good chances to win that game. And I said before, you know, we seldom seem to be that team who can just play a bit crap and win. Yeah, I mean, it never sort of seems to happen for us, certainly not at the moment anyway. So I think he got it wrong in terms of, the effort and that was all there. I just think he got it wrong in terms of the personnel. I think Paul was probably saying a bit of that then, but yeah, the right side, you're not getting a lot of creativity from there. But I just thought, like, we just needed the best footballers on the pitch, because I think Crystal Palace are probably a bit more technically good than we'd care to give them credit for. I thought, yeah, they're not too bad at moving the ball around even without their best players. And I was amazed when Arna didn't start. I don't know if there was still some he's obviously trying to phase him back from injury or whatnot. I don't know. I was really surprised and disappointed that Onana didn't start the game. You saw the impact he made when he came on, and I thought at Man City the other week too. And I thought, like, well, if you're really struggling to decide who to play in their midfield too, because obviously the core they played, if you're struggling to decide who to play between Onana, Gay, and James Garner, I don't see why you couldn't just play Garner out on the right, really, there. Because I think he's going to give you the same work rate as Harrison anyway, who obviously dropped out. And better use of the ball, good tenacity. Just a bit more nous on the ball, really. So I don't think it would have been too bad a call just to do that, because you're not, I think Young, I'm not saying he should never start any games, but I think his role at his age, coming back from injury as well, he should be coming on 20 minutes to go to try and shore games up, I think. To be all out and out right side of the attack. You know what I mean? And you're not really, you get the odd surge forwards when Ben Coffey, wants a game or so. But, you're not, I think Ben's done quite well since he's been in the team the last few games generally. But again, you're not really getting, are you going to get assists? Are you going to get, is it going to get goal contributions from Ben? I don't think so, really. You know what I mean? So if you're going to have Ben there, I think you certainly need somebody more creative than Ashley Young ahead of him. I'm not saying Garner's the answer there as such, but I think he's given you more than the other two would, or play Havertzen. You know what I mean? But I think you've got to make a bolder decision in the middle there. Onana has to play. He is to be starting games. He's probably the one player we've got who, when the ball's coming to him, he knows what he's going to do with it next. You know, he's a couple of steps ahead all the time, and he has to be given games. I hope it wasn't an injury, but in a kind of way, I hope you can kind of justify it with, like, he's not quite ready to start yet again. Because if that was a sort of tactical decision not to play him, then I'm flummoxed by that, because surely it's especially him to Crystal Palace, it's got to be recognised that he's our best footballer out there and our best tackler probably. so he should probably be there anyway. So that was my biggest frustration, was Onana not starting the game.
Yeah, and we made all those points earlier, and I'd sort of made the point that against that kind of opposition, you've got to surely go with someone with a bit more about them, like a Nathan Patterson could play that right wing role, or Lewis Dobbin could play on the other flank, because obviously Dwight McNeil's been struggling. Jacore, obviously way off being fully fit, which is, given how important he is to the team, it's understandable that things didn't really quite click in the attack the way that we want them to. You know, hopefully going forward, and with memories of our next opponents and what we did there last year fresh in the mind, you know, hopefully he can start to be that sort of missing piece again once he's fully fit. Talk about Ben Godfrey. I mean, I don't like centre halves playing a fullback again, especially against a team, an opponent with so few threats as Palace had. But I thought he was actually one of the better performers on the day. Mm-hmm. But again, we don't have overlapping fullbacks at the best of times, and Ben Godfrey is not an overlapping fullback. And just talking about some of the individual performances, apart from his incessant long ball, I thought Tarkowski was his usual impressive self at the back. Aside from that unfortunate mistake, which led to the goal, Anand obviously made a real difference. And I agree, Paul, he has to start. I'm going to give Deitch the benefit of the doubt and say that he didn't feel Onana was Deitch fit, in quotes, to start the game. But I think if he's fit enough, to be on the bench, then I think he needs to come on earlier, certainly. I mean, we were all crying out for the change at halftime that never came, which is another gripe with Deitch, is that he's just so conservative. Mm-hmm. just for once, I'd like to see him just shake things up at halftime when it's clear that it's not working. He just seems to want to flog the same players, you know, to run them into the ground at the expense of, or, you know, when the alternative is to just try something just a little bit different. And again, this was the match to do it in. This was the opposition to do it again. I mean, you know, Ashley Young playing out on the wing against Manchester City with all the, you know, the defensive attributes that he brings, all the experience he brings, I'm fine with that. You know, that's not a game we're going to win. This one was one that we really needed to win, you know, purely from a psychological perspective. As I said earlier, I thought Calvert-Lewin did actually really, really well. He did as well as he could leading the line. Gay was fine, but I think in the middle we needed someone a bit more forward thinking, like Onana in there. And there wasn't really a lot to admire otherwise. As we've said, McNeil is just completely off it right now. I think, as we said on the last podcast, perhaps, you know, what's going on with his girlfriend is clearly just taking a toll. He was probably the one that needed a rest more so than Jack Harrison. Again, thinking back to the last time we played Brighton down on the South Coast, you know, McNeil was obviously the star of the show down there. I can't see the same Dwight McNeil being on the pitch at the MX Community Stadium this weekend, because he just looks in a completely different place. So, yeah, it's a worry. It's definitely a worry. And I think the question that I asked Adam and Paul M earlier, Paul Trail, was that, are we sort of seeing Deitch reverting to the mean, reverting to sort of his old kind of Deitch ball ways in the way that we saw Roberto Martinez eventually kind of revert back to the stereotypical ways that his teams played before he came to us?
I don't know if I don't really know. I mean, yeah, it's the first time I guess he's had sort of anything like a sort of full complement of players available to go farm, players coming back. I don't know. I mean, football's fun. I mean, I'd probably pull it back as he ever really moved away from that that style. I think it's all, you know, while a lot of the wins that we had, I mean, you know, yeah, we loved them all. They were, you know, but even like the Newcastle one, which we won 3-0, it was late goals. It was a tight game until then. You know, I mean, I think it's kind of always been quite percentage football throughout, really. I think it's been the number of games throughout December and January taking combined with the injuries, taking a massive hit on the squad, I think. The 10 points deduction, not knowing what's happening with that, can't help. But we've seen already this season how, you know, just a win can change everything. And you know, if we go to Brighton and win, and then, you know, follow that up with West Ham at home, and, you know what I mean, and just it can change very, very quickly. So I don't see a big need to sort of panic on the way he's doing things at the moment, Sean. I think he's got the players behind him. I think that's an important thing. I think the real drop off we saw under Frank Lampard and Rafa Benitez was clearly the players weren't playing for them. They weren't in line with what they were being told, and, you know, we're not seeing that, I don't think, from the players. So stick with them. Stick with that. Again, he hasn't really had anything to work with still in terms of sort of budget or transfer windows or anything like that. Really, he hasn't really had an opportunity to hone his squad. And I don't really see what we can do otherwise. Really, we can. I know you're not advocating for change, Linda. I know that's not what you're saying, but I just think we kind of got to get behind it at this point, because, you know, I just think adding another factor of adding more pressure on the manager, adding more pressure on the players, a bit like what James Garner was kind of saying a little bit the other day, like it or not, it's not helpful right now. You know what I mean? And we're not in a position where we can afford to, you know, to be changing manager now in terms of where we are on the table and stuff like that, you know. So I suppose he's got to stick with it, stick with what he's doing. And I think the time to judge him is perhaps at some point into next season. I assume we're still in the league. And I think, as Paul was saying, caught the end of it before, if we're still at that point of just like, well, this football's kind of the same now, and we're sort of like, you know, it's once he signed a few players and once he's better, then okay. But without really opportunity to make any gains in the transfer window, it's always going to be tough to change if you've only got them same players, you know. So I think he's got to go with what he knows, really, because he knows and trusts a lot of them players now. So I don't see how he's got much choice but to go with what he's comfortable with, really.
Yeah, I mean, it was very much a devil's advocate kind of question, because I think, you know, of all the factors that we've already mentioned, you know, he hasn't had any ability to add to the team in terms of the transfer market. We've obviously got, we've had injuries, we've got a very small squad to begin with. We've got this, again, the circumstances around the 10-point deduction weighing on everybody. I think that my worry is that, and I'm remembering Carlo Ancelotti's struggles in this regard, I'm remembering Frank Lampard's in this regard, we kind of get into a bit of a cycle at home where it's this vicious cycle of the pressure from the fans to play a certain way and get the results that we need, weighing on the players so they're unable to perform at all. And as Paul M said earlier, our home form, our home fixtures are going to be the key to survival. At some point, we've got to start winning football matches. And my grave concern from Monday was that they looked lost. They looked like they did not know how to go about it, apart from just slinging it into the box, winning a set piece. I mean, at one point, there was a situation where I think it was McNeil who could have kept going on down the line, and in the end, he just sort of ended up playing for the foul because, you know, our best chances are all coming from dead ball situations right now. You've got to, in the Premier League, you've got to have more about you. You've got to have more in your arsenal. So that's my concern. My concern now is, how do you get back? How does Deitch, particularly someone who focuses so much on mentality and that side of the game, is how does he get these players focused back on actually having the confidence to play the way that they need to play against certain teams they're going to be facing in the coming weeks?
I think he's shown at certain times and in certain areas of a pitch that he can change it up. And Godfrey's a good example of that. And I agree with you, Lynn. I thought he was probably one of our better players on Monday night. He had, yeah, the customary kind of barreling run that he does and gets forward, a bit of a lung-busting run. He looks like he can challenge a bit more in the air, and he looks better for a consistent run of games. And that's great. It's not the ideal solution, but it's a better solution maybe than what we were trying to work with before in that area of the pitch. But then it's the stubbornness and the insistence on playing certain others. That's what worries me a little bit, because you mentioned McNeil. You could quite happily say, well, to be fair, McNeil created our best opportunities in the game with his deliveries, which he did. But I think he would have been far more effective maybe coming off the bench for the last 20, 25 minutes with someone else starting that game. Because as I mentioned, he looked tired. I know that's an area of the pitch where we're not blessed with as many options as we have in others, but he looked tired. And then, yeah, we've already mentioned the Ashley Young kind of fiasco playing in that position. It doesn't work. We've got plenty of empirical evidence now that it definitely categorically does not work. So that's where I'd hope to see a bit of change in the Brighton game. And I think the other thing that we've obviously mentioned is, yes, a fully fit Onana walks into most sides above us, I'd say. He's on his day a very, very good player and has room to improve. So I think Onana starting games is a must. And I think a fit Decore creates something, has that unpredictability that we probably need in the side. It's making the other pieces fit and also playing to some of the strengths we've got, because Calvert-Lewin's a big guy who wins a ball in the air doesn't mean we need to spend the first 45, 50 minutes trying to hit him on the diagonal every single time, because it clearly wasn't working. And that's the stubbornness. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see us try and approach the game a little bit differently against Brighton, because hey, that's what we did last time and it worked a treat. 5-1 would do very nicely, but if Deitch wants to do exactly the same thing and we win 1-0, also more than yeah. That as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point there, Adam, as well. And I think it's going to be quite an intriguing contest on Saturday, because Brighton are going to be play a far more open style of football than what Crystal Palace did. So by definition, we should therefore have more space to exploit. So I suppose the question throws back on Deitch's tactics for this game. So, you know, if when the team is announced, you see that Ashley Young is playing again, well, I think straight away you're thinking, oh, you know, we're going for a defensive set up here, which I don't think is the way to do against Brighton. I think Brighton are the type of team you can actually take advantage of the space that they give you and try and, you know, reap some reward from that. Dwight McNeil, Adam, it's a really interesting point. If this is NFL, you bring them just on for the set pieces at the moment, wouldn't you? But it's not NFL, so we can't do that. But,
special teams.
and as much as I criticised them on Monday evening, the delivery for that corner for Onana's goal, you could not have hit a better corner. It was absolutely superb. It was just waiting to be met with the headers at the back of the net. But I think they've got to look at some way of easing McNeil's burden. Now, you know, whether Patterson comes in and does a lot, so whether Mikhailenko offers a lot more support on the left-hand side to help McNeil there or not, I'm not quite sure. But he looks absolutely worn out at the moment. And I don't, there were a couple of times in the second half where, you know, as you said, he was going forward and just kind of looked to get a free kick because he didn't have the energy to push on. We know that Dyche doesn't like to gamble particularly, so I can't see him making any huge changes this game. I think Onana has to come back in. Totally agree with what Paul T said there before. He's our biggest threat in midfield. And I don't think Garner and Gay works in midfield because Garner doesn't have pace. Onana has pace. He can be covered and get back into position. And Onana and Garner Gay is a far better midfield combination for me. Hopefully, Decore's closer to full match fitness by the game on Saturday as well, which might give us another option. I worry about the fact we played on the Monday night. So Brighton have had one more day to recover than us. Long journey down south as well. And at this stage, I'd be delighted with a 1-0 last minute winner from a corner kick. I also wouldn't be hugely upset with a draw down there, Brighton as well. But at some stage, two things have got to happen, haven't they? One, we've got to start winning again. Two, Calvert-Lewin's got to start scoring again. It will happen at some stage, but the longer it goes on, the pressure is ramped up. And I also hope that before Saturday, we have a decision from the appeal panel as to where we are. Because at the moment, we're kind of stumbling around in the dark. We don't know what our situation is. And the longer the situation goes on, that does not help our team in any shape, form whatsoever.
Oh, Andy's dropped in. We've got a full house. we're just actually about to move on to the Brighton game, but it would be remiss not to allow you, Andy, to offer your thoughts on what we witnessed on Monday.
Which, we're just saying how good it was.
We've had some certain adjectives. Yeah,
it was a classic. I bought the DVD. It was so good.
Thank you. What a treat to be able to share my views with you. I'm sure I realise I'm probably repeating a lot of what you've said, but it goes along the same lines of what Ivan, we've been saying for a good month or so, it's pitiful with the ball, isn't it? It really is. Again, I think we look great without it, but when we get it, I really can't see what the plan is. I can't see that there is a plan, and if there is a plan, the players are not executing it. Do you know, the other night, and I don't really want to mention his name too much on this podcast, but the other night my mind went back to the early days of Rafa Benitez. And what was clear when he first came in, that he was getting us to cross the ball. The whole system was crossing the ball, and he had Calvert-Lewin fit and he had Richarlison fit at the time. And there was a clear plan. It wasn't very nice, but there was a clear plan. And you could tell when we got into crossing positions that everybody around the ball or anybody in the box knew what was going to happen. But even that at the moment, we put brilliant balls in the box, but it feels like nobody is anticipating that there's going to be a ball in the box. So to be kind of dipping down to, even parts of Benitez look better than this with the ball is, it's probably just shows. I mean, it's one of the most frustrating games of football I've ever watched. Because Palace weren't great. In fact, I thought they were quite poor, really. They've got their three best players out, and yet we play like that. So, I'm sure I'm repeating, but it was just such a frustrating watch, and it brought it home to me, as I kind of put on social media last night, it brought it home to me the overall effect of this deduction and the appeal not being announced yet in terms of the result. It's affecting us. It's affecting the fans. It's affecting teams that play us. It's affecting other games now because they don't know where they are in the league either. It is just a royal mess. And I think that played out almost to a perfect storm. Well, it was almost perfect storm because we didn't lose the game in the end, but it was almost a perfect storm the other night of all this frustration, not only what's going on in front of you, but what's going on elsewhere or not going on elsewhere. And I just think, you know, we need clarity. We need, even if it's bad news, we need news because otherwise this is just going to drag on. And as I said on X last night, if we were in 12th and 10 points ahead of the drop zone, another point in the bag, okay, didn't play well, didn't lose the game, move on. But it just feels so much worse than that.
Yeah, it does. We could potentially field 9 of the 11 players who played in the 5-1 win at Brighton last season, and Patterson was among them, I might add. Obviously, Iwobi and Mina have gone. Swap Onana for Gay, and you arguably have a better starting 11 than a year ago. But we just seem to be a world away from that kind of display. And it just watching Monday, as I said earlier, they just seems to be psychologically in a completely, completely different place. So there's a lot of work for Deitch to obviously do, and we've on a shorter week. But
as we've said, we've already gone down there within the last year and put on a really great performance and come away with a stunning victory. Is it too much to expect that we'll come away with anything from Saturday, given how low the confidence is in the team?
Oh, why not? I mean, we're lacking confidence, and that's the thing. When you lost your confidence, it's quite difficult to get it back, and it comes from that Calvert-Lewin goal or somebody, like, a bit like you did at Brighton away last season, when everything just kind of came together. Yeah, football's funny. These ones happen. Yeah, you know I mean, I'm in a sticky spell at the moment. Again, not losing that many of them, fighting. We're picking up points here and there. Sooner or later, and that's how football works. You've all seen it enough times. you win one, whether you deserve it or not. It just goes in for you. I remember like this time last season. We were saying, the guy said, "Oh, we're going to get a surprise win at Brighton," and then we'll, whatever else we did.
Say it again.
Surprise win at Brighton. Well, a draw at Wolves and beat Bournemouth, and that was enough, was it? But not there yet. But
it's easy.
I don't see why we can't go and get something there. Brighton hammered Sheffield United the other week. They're doing okay at the moment, but they're not doing great, are they? I don't think they're the Brighton to be feared when we went there last season and won 5-1. You know what I mean? I think I could see the game being quite similar to the home game, actually. Doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to Mikalenko is going to flash one in quite early. But I could see it being very much like... I enjoyed watching that game. It felt like a bit of a game of chess, almost, because the way they attack and keep the ball was very, very good. And we just had this very controlled unit defensively. So if we can get an early goal, it'll certainly help us. So, yeah, I think we'll do okay. I think we'll come away with something there. I'm not brave enough to say what, but I don't think we'll get beat there. I think they seem to respond quite well to setbacks. And I think that, while they won't say it publicly, I think the players, Tarkowski and et al., will see that as a little bit of a setback on Monday. I think they'll have them... Yeah, had them fighting and ready. I really hope Onana's into that midfield. In terms of Dwight McNeil, I think similar to the rest of the team. I mean, I know we referenced sort of like, oh, is our personal factors an issue there? We don't really know. But what one thing that is clear to me, again, he's lacking confidence. And we've seen what a difference it can make to Dwight when he does score a goal and how much of a better player he just elevates big time. Yeah, I mean, if he can get a goal, if he can get an ESL, we'll put on a great ball in from open play. Yeah, you know, I mean, we need that feisty Dwight back, don't we? You know, he's got that aggression. And I feel that will come once we get a goal. The Decore's back in there. You know, I think, you know, sooner or later, whether we deserve it or not, something will break for us. It might not necessarily be this weekend, but it'll happen. I just say it is inconceivable. I don't think we've played bad enough in all these games to be in this position where we haven't won in X amount now. You know what I mean? So something's got to go sooner or later. And that happens. you pick up again. You know what I mean? And it's whatever happens with the points deduction, I feel that gives us a shot on the arm as well. If that, even if that's a case of like you're getting your 10 points, you know what I mean? I think you might get that little bit of a siege mentality again. Then like let's roll the sleeves up here. This is it's us against them. Similarly, if you get some, you know, 4, 5, 6, 10 points back, you know what I mean? The players are just, you know, galloping a bit more then. You know what I mean? I can see that making a big difference too. So, and that should surely, you'd think, come before Saturday. So, I'm a bit more optimistic than most, I think.
I am now. That was great.
Yeah. You won me over, Paul. But I think, as you indicated as well, but it's about momentum with Everton at the moment. We're on a bit of a streak at the moment where we're not winning matches, and that's got to end at some stage. I'm probably in a minority here, but I keep looking back to that League Cup quarter-final against Fulham when Onana steps up to score and put us in the semi-final. At that point, we're on a run of four games without defeat. We haven't conceded the goal in four games. We're on a chance of making the League Cup semi-final. The place is buoyant. Everyone's behind the team. And since that penalty miss, we haven't won a game. And the whole momentum that kind of built up kind of evaporated a little slowly after that particular penalty miss. And it will come back. You're right. It has to come back. And the good thing is we're not losing games. We're always in the game. And even at Man City, okay, we lost 2-0, but we were always in the game for at least 70 minutes or so. And the point about Dwight McNeil is really interesting that he said there, Paul, because thinking back to when he's on peak form this season, the number of times you cut him from the wing and run at defences and they were hit shots from the edge of the penalty. I've not seen him do that now for about 7, 8, 9 games. And him to get back into that, in a way, he's not just on the wings. He plays behind the attack and creates opportunities, but also make a big difference for us as well. But you've won me over, Paul. I think we've got to win on Saturday now.
My work is done.
Yeah. Well, you spoke about a shot in the arm, Paul. You've just given us all one. So that's injecting that optimism into my veins. But I think Decore is really important to that as well. To giving that space and occupying defenders, and hopefully allowing someone like McNeil to be a bit more expressive. And he's obviously been missing for a lot of this kind of barren spell. So that does bring me confidence, albeit he clearly wasn't fully fit on Monday, and I doubt he's going to be as sharp as we'd like him to be. But yeah, let's. You're right. Let's try and be positive. I think it's we are staying in games, as you mentioned. And Brighton, yes, on their day can score a lot of goals. They did against Sheffield United, but they're also a side that concedes goals. And we know that on the whole, if we score first, there's a chance for. We could cause them some problems, and I think you mentioned earlier, Paul, the fact that they do give you that space to do so. So hopefully we can take advantage of that, and hopefully that means at the very least, as well as someone like Onana coming in the middle of the park, we do have that extra option out wide on the right, and try and pose them a few questions. And the only way that Dwight McNeil scores well, but the only way that Dominic Calvert-Lewin's going to score is if we keep giving him chances. I think the two chances that he missed on Monday, they weren't clear cut. The first ball was pretty behind him. The second was a trickier header than maybe it appeared, certainly from the game. Watching it back, it's a difficult chance. And I think if we continue to make opportunities for him, whether that's from set pieces or hopefully a bit more from open play, he will get his goal. And I think he's another player who, when that first goal goes in, when that first positive moment happens, it hopefully, again, starts that bit of consistency, that bit of momentum. So would I take a point? Absolutely. Would I take three? Yes, please. Am I going to be surprised? I don't know. But what do you think, Andy?
Tough game. I can see that Brighton haven't lost at home since second home game of the season against West Ham. So they are, that's in the Premier League anyway. So they have got a good record at home, but we were saying like the goals in their games, they've, you know, the last few, you look through 5-0, 2-1, 4-1, 4-0, 5-2, 4-2. You know, there's a lot of goals in Brighton games. And we've proven on the road, at least, that our plan, if I'm maintaining the fact there is one, certainly works much better on the road. It just allows us to sit in and allow a team like Brighton to come forward, and there will be gaps. We know there will be gaps because we saw them last season. I'm more, it's strange, isn't it? At the moment, I feel more confident going away to Brighton than I did at home beating Palace. I just, you know, and I think that's how the players feel, to be honest. You can probably see that translate onto the pitch. I'm not too stressed by the Brighton game, where the Palace game, all weekend, I was kind of just thinking, oh, come on, Everton Monday, come on. And it just kind of, yeah, I had a sense of foreboding about that game. But yeah, away to Brighton, yeah, I'm far more confident that we'll get something, funnily enough. And as you say, if we can get Onana back in the team, who I thought made a big difference when he came on, and hopefully have Harrison back. And this is me saying bring Harrison back, which is something. But I think he just offers so much more attacking-wise than Young does. Then, yeah, why not? I'm on the trail bus. I'm going for it.
The trail. I like that.
The trail. Yeah, I think one of the key things is our away form. You know, we've been very good away from home because of the way that, you know, we're set up to not concede. The problem is that where before we were nicking goals away from home, the goals are obviously the big problem right now. So, you know, it's going to, if that continues, then we're going to have to try and ground out another 0-0, which I think at this point we'd all take. I'd be surprised because given obviously Brighton's potency and the fact that, as we've said, there will be opportunities for us to counterattack. It's just whether we have the legs to do so right now. Is it, a lot of the players look very, very leggy. So maybe we'll have to take a different approach. But we'll have to see. I don't think there's anything to say about the appeal at this point. Everything's been said. We're just waiting. I can't believe it's taken this long. I suspect that they will announce it again on Friday afternoon and then run for the hills, turn off all their phones. Then the Premier League office officials will just turn off their phones and go into their bunkers and leave us to either gnash our teeth or I don't know. I can't see us getting all 10 points back. I think that's pie in the sky. Anything that we get would be a bonus, obviously. Anything would be a shot in the arm. But just before we sign off, Paul M, you were at Goodison to see Seamus Coleman awarded the Dixie Dean Memorial Award at an event staged by the Heritage Society. That looked like a really nice evening.
Yeah, it was a really uplifting event. It was good to see Seamus getting the recognition he deserves for his loyal service to the club as well. Great guy, great ambassador for the club, and you know, he spoke to the audience there. He's really positive about, you know, even we don't get any points back, but got enough in the team to stay up. He's convinced the team's good enough to avoid getting caught up into the bottom three again. So it was a really uplifting experience, and it was great to pay tribute to a player who, let's face it, could have easily moved to another club and last, you know, any time during his Everton career, because he's such an outstanding full-back. And it's good to have somebody there to pay tribute to, who just sums up the ethos of the club. Now, if we had a team of 11 Seamus Colemans, we'd be pushing for Champions League places every year. Yeah. Superb ambassador of the club, fantastic captain of the club as well. And Sean Dyche, you know, must be so pleased you've got Seamus Coleman there under his command. It's just a pity age and injury to catch up with him, because we've talked about the right back spot. And it always boils down to the fact that we'd never, ever found a replacement for Seamus Coleman in all these years under successive managers. If he is fit for the final 6, 7, 8 games of the season, that is going to be a massive plus to our chances this season as well. But all-round great guy. He deserves every tribute that he got. And also, for those old enough to remember, Derek Temple, who scored the winning goal in the 1966 World Cup final. He's 82 now. He was there at the event as well. He was as lucid and on the ball as ever, and it was just great to be in the company of someone who is, and totally justifies the term, an Everton legend.
Lovely. Great way to end it. We'll wrap it up there. Many thanks to Adam, the two Pauls, and Andy. If you're making the long trek to the South Coast on Saturday, safe travels. And we hope your dedication is rewarded with the spirit of performance, at least from the lads. 3 points would be marvellous, but of course one would do. Until next time, Blues, thanks for listening, and up the toffees.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.